From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. And on this day, death with dignity is once again in the Maine legislature. Supporters say the proposal's time has come. And a Maine doctor's answer to the rapidly increasing price of the EpiPen. That's all ahead in a moment.
This day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the law offices of Joe Bornstein, dedicated to serving injured and disabled Mainers from Kittery to Caribou. JoeBornstein.com. And by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Masters of Policy Planning and Management, preparing students to be a force for positive change in their communities.
Maine Independent Senator Angus King says he will vote against the confirmation of Judge Neil Gorsuch to the U.S. Supreme Court. Mal Leary reports.
In a written statement, Senator King said he has carefully considered Gorsuch, attended his confirmation hearings, and listened to Mainers who support and oppose the nominee. But ultimately, King says he will oppose Judge Gorsuch for several reasons. His refusal to answer questions about his judicial philosophy during his confirmation hearings, his record as an appellate judge who put the rights of corporations above their employees, and for what King calls the unchecked flow of dark money that has gone into his nomination. King says he will also oppose procedural efforts in the Senate to end debate and move the nomination forward. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
Legislative leaders in both parties are vowing to enact a constitutional amendment designed to give victims of violent crimes the same legal standing as those accused of committing them. The so-called Victims Bill of Rights bill is backed by several high-powered lobbyists and has the financial backing of a California billionaire. But as Steve Missler reports, the national effort to put the accused and victims on equal footing may be more complicated than it sounds.
For Arthur Jetty, a victim's Bill of Rights is deeply personal. 17 years ago, Jetty learned that his 21-month-old grandson and his daughter's best friend had been murdered at the young woman's home in Dexter. Both were shot in the head.
It shattered my reality and changed my entire perspective of life. It affected me right to my DNA.
Jetty spoke slowly and shuffled his written remarks as he told his story during a press event at the State House. He was flanked by others who had lost loved ones, and also by lawmakers convinced that the survivors should have the same constitutional rights as the people accused of altering their lives forever.
For crime victims, it is yet another dimension of cruelty to know that the accused has more rights than us, considering they have no right to cause such a deep and lifelong pain.
To fix this perceived imbalance, legislative leaders are proposing a Victims' Bill of Rights. If approved by the legislature and voters, it would enshrine in Maine's Constitution victims' rights already codified in Maine law and carried out by victims' divisions within prosecutor offices. That would include notifying alleged victims when the accused is released from custody, of all court and parole proceedings, and allowing those victims to be heard at sentencing. It would also allow victims to refuse to be the subject of deposition or discovery by the accused or their attorney. Democratic House Majority Leader Aaron Herbig is a supporter of the bill.
And more than anything, they should be afforded the same rights that somebody has that committed this crime. That's a no-brainer. That's what we're talking about here today.
But it's not necessarily a no-brainer. To Portland defense attorney Tim Zarillo.
It would be, in my view, a gigantic step backwards if we want to ensure fair proceedings for criminal defendants.
Zarillo says the first section of the bill requires victims to be treated with fairness and dignity, and that their safety and privacy is protected. He wonders if such language will allow a prosecutor to intervene during a cross-examination and ask the judge for...
And I don't know what, because it is unlimited.
Zarillo also envisions further backlogs in the currently jam-packed criminal defense docket. And law enforcement officials in other states have also cited problems with this kind of law.
It was sold to the people because obviously everyone wants to help victims. And it was sold to the people as a basic, you know, this is not going to affect the way that we do business. And it absolutely has.
Brian Goodkin is the sheriff for Gallatin County in southwest Montana. Last year, Montana voters overwhelmingly approved a Victim's Bill of Rights. Like Maine, the state had already codified victims' protections in law. But then a group called Marcy's Law for Everyone swooped in and spent nearly $2.5 million on a ballot campaign that amended the state's constitution. There was no organized opposition. Now, Gutkin wishes there had been.
By the time we tried to oppose this thing, it had already, it was already its own animal, and there was no way we were going to. And then, of course, you look like a bad guy because it looks like you're saying no to victims, which is absolutely not the case.
Gutkin says several problems have surfaced since the passage of the constitutional amendment. For one, it loosely defined victims in such a way that newly constitutionally enshrined protections, notifications, and rights expanded beyond those affected by violent crimes.
I mean, someone can witness a crime and be a victim.
And that's a big problem for Stacy Weissen, the director of Gallatin County Victim Services. Weissen is anticipating an explosion in victims seeking her services. That means she has to hire another counselor, probably another administrator.
If we don't get extra help and this goes through as planned and we start working these additional cases, we're going to be barely keeping our head above water.
Gutkin says the same goes for the city's attorney's office and the county jail. He said the scenario could play out in Montana's 56 counties if the law isn't fixed.
And again, the state is not ponying up a penny to pay for any of this.
Like the Montana bill, Maine's bill is pushed by Marcy's Law for All, an organization founded and financially backed by Henry Nicholas. Nicholas co-founded the tech firm Broadcom Corporation. His sister Marcy was killed by her ex-boyfriend in 1983. Her mother later said she saw Marcy's killer in a grocery store while he was out on bail. Nicholas is now a billionaire, and he has spent more than $16 million to create victims' bills of rights across the country. He first succeeded in California in 2008, spending nearly $5 million to back a ballot initiative there. Marcy's Law for All has backed campaigns in at least 8 other states and is actively lobbying in state houses in Maine and elsewhere. If 2/3 of the Maine legislature approves the bill this session, it will go to voters for final ratification in November. Republican Senate President Mike Thibodeau says lawmakers will make sure the bill is crafted so that it can work here.
We're going to get it right. I'm sure that that folks are going to work real hard to make sure that it fits Maine values. But make no mistake, this is important.
So important that the bill has the blessing of the entire legislative leadership. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
Now, if there were too many mice in Millbridge, Dr. Kathleen London might have built a better mousetrap. Instead, the rising numbers of uninsured patients with allergy conditions inspired her to adapt an emergency auto-injector at a fraction of the $600 cost offered by the company that manufactures EpiPens. A.J. Higgins has our story.
This week, the Illinois-based Mylan Company began a worldwide voluntary recall of its EpiPen and EpiPen Junior allergy shots. In a prepared statement, Mylan said its non-refillable auto-injectors were being recalled as a result of two claims outside of the United States that the auto-injectors failed to activate because of a potential defect in a supplier component. The fact that the auto-injectors might not work was not a major concern for Dr. Kathleen London, a Millbridge family physician who says her patients found Mylan's $600 price tag for two non-refillable devices beyond their reach. So instead, London came up with an alternative that costs $50.
Last summer, it took me about 10 pages into Google to come across this device, the Autojector 2. It's made by a company in England called Owen & Mumford, and they market it for people who are giving themselves injections, predominantly insulin. But it's really for any medication.
In addition to its low price, London's injector can be refilled at $2.50 per dose of epinephrine, something that can't be done with an EpiPen. And while some doctors may have reservations about the risk of patients refilling the device themselves, London says her patients face a greater risk by not having access to the drug and delivery system because the brand name is prohibitively expensive. Gordon Smith of the Maine Medical Association praised London for her innovation.
There's so many things that discourage physicians in healthcare today, and that leads to burnout and frustration, and people are more prone to just give up. And so to see something as innovative and creative as Dr. London has done with the EpiPen should be noted and supported.
So far, London has sold about a dozen of her adapted auto-injectors to her patients. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
This week, Maine lawmakers will consider two similar bills that pose the same question. Should terminally ill patients have the right to end their lives? It's a question that's come before the legislature a half dozen times since 1995 and was rejected by a single vote 2 years ago. Supporters of the latest proposals hope this time the scales will tip in their favor. But as Patty White reports, opponents fear the law would result in abuse and erosion of patient care.
Some of the people who support what's called death with dignity laws are the ones who hope to use it, like 57-year-old Eva Thompson of Camden.
Yes, I would be first in line to get the drug. I wouldn't be in a hurry to take the drug. I'm very much enjoying my life.
Thompson was diagnosed with stage 4 colon cancer about 4 years ago. It's not curable, she says, and her treatment options have dwindled. She doesn't want her death to be prolonged or painful. Having some control over the matter would give her reassurance.
And I think I would actually live longer and better if I had the drug, because I wouldn't be spending all this time worrying about, otherwise, what am I going to do? Otherwise, how is the end going to go? I waste an incredible amount of time thinking about that, and I don't have time to waste.
Peace of mind is something that 43-year-old Rebecca Van Warmer wanted, too. She died earlier this year from cancer that spread from her breast to her liver, spine, and eventually her brain. Before her death, she was a vocal advocate for death with dignity. Her husband, Ken Van Warmer, says she wanted her lasting memory to be when she was full of life and smiling. Instead, he says, she was reduced to final days full of pain and suffering, despite hospice care.
You know, whether it was a few days of suffering or going quietly in her sleep, going quietly in her sleep was a much better option. And she just didn't have that for herself.
Democratic Representative Patty Hymanson wants that option to be available. She's a co-sponsor of LD 347. She's also a neurologist who spent a decade as the chair of the Ethics Committee at Portsmouth Hospital.
In ethics, medical ethics, we try to think of four different ideas.
Those ideas are patient autonomy, doing what's best for patients, avoiding harm, and justice.
The idea of this bill is to fully embrace autonomy at the same time that I feel as a physician I'm doing good, because I am helping the person to live out their life. And I think as physicians, we need to be on the side of embracing the entirety of what life means, and that also includes death.
Hymanson says the bill includes safeguards to prevent abuse. Patients must meet with a physician twice, request medication in writing in the presence of witnesses, and must administer it themselves. But Stacey Converse, an attorney with Disability Rights Maine, says she doesn't think those safeguards are adequate. There are too many protections for physicians, she says, and virtually no state oversight.
The worst case scenario is that a person could end their life that was influenced through coercion or undue influence.
Though Disability Rights is not taking a position on the idea of death with dignity itself, the Maine Medical Association opposes it.
The AMA Code of Ethics makes this unethical act if you to intentionally cause the death of a patient.
Spokesman Gordon Smith says patient autonomy is important, but
what's really matters more to us is the quality of the hospice and palliative care available.
And says Candace Powell of the Maine Hospice Council, hospice and palliative care is not available in many parts of the state. Before Maine creates a policy that allows patients to hasten death, she says, it should focus on ensuring quality end-of-life care is available to everyone.
In the bill, it talks a lot about choice. And, you know, I ask people to really think about this. Choice is when you have something to choose from.
If this bill were approved, Powell's concern is that it would further contribute to what she sees as the steady erosion in U.S. healthcare of prioritizing adequate time and care for patients.
This is more about where we're going as a society. Is this where you want to go? And is this a piece of that?
But Sarah Whitty, who lost her 27-year-old son Andy to brain cancer in 2010, says her son had all the care and support possibly available. In hospice care in his final days, she says, he still couldn't escape agonizing pain despite steady doses of medication.
And you wouldn't let anyone you love go through that with wondering if there isn't another way. And I said to the doctor who was there, a really warm, compassionate guy, I said, could you give him a little more? Like a little more? I mean, just please. And he looked me straight in the eye and he said, I can't cross the line.
It's a line that, if Maine crosses, would put it in the company of six other states, plus the District of Columbia, that allow physician-assisted death. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
Finally today, under President Donald Trump's proposed budget, the federal government, or rather the Federal Department of Education, would see large cuts in many areas. But it would add hundreds of millions of dollars in funding for school choice. As Robbie Feinberg reports, that new emphasis has many educators in rural Maine concerned.
Mount Abram Regional High School north of Farmington is a small school with only about 150 students. But the teenagers who step off the bus each morning come from dozens of towns, some 40 or 50 miles away. That can mean a long bus ride for some. But senior Olivia Scott says it's created a tight-knit community.
Here, you get a really strong sense of who you are individually, and you get to know all of your classmates and all of your peers and all of your teachers, even.
Because everything happens there. Town meetings happen there.
Susan Pratt is the superintendent of SAD 58, which is home to Mount Abram. She says in an area that's been hard hit by a loss of jobs and people, the schools are much more than a place to hold classes.
The center. They're the center of the community. It's really the only gathering place for some of these little towns.
And that has Pratt worried about a new push for school choice in the president's budget proposal. While it's still unclear what exactly school choice would mean, a common approach is to give families vouchers for a certain amount of money and let them choose where they want their kids to go to school. It's been tried in places such as Wisconsin and Florida to mixed results. Pratt says in rural western Maine, where schools are hours away from each other, getting students to another destination would be close to impossible. Experts say that means the law would likely only benefit more affluent students who could supply their own transportation.
Your options are limited, and so their choices are limited for folks just because of the distance as much as anything else.
But for many educators, the bigger worry is what happens if students do leave their current public school district. Tina Maserve, the superintendent of RSU 16 in Poland, says she's concerned it would leave schools without enough students and revenue to provide a quality education.
Again, you've got to have a certain student population to offer AP chemistry, AP physics, AP calculus, plus your regular algebra class and geometry class. So again, you're running into that problem of needing to have a certain student population to provide a well-rounded education for kids.
Maserve says her district got a taste of the problem 4 years ago after roughly a dozen students left the district for a new nearby charter school. It cost the district $130,000 in state subsidies.
There were like one or two kids from each grade level, and you can't cut a teacher. It doesn't reduce your transportation costs. You can't, you know, close down a building, but $130,000 is a lot of money. So it would be equivalent to us of three teaching positions.
But Maine already has a number of school choice programs in place. The state is home to nine charter schools, and state law allows for one more, though a bill in the state legislature could potentially get rid of that cap. In addition, roughly 5,000 students in Maine live in a school district without a public school. That means they can choose whatever school they want to go to. And there are some educators who don't have a problem with expanding that policy.
Personally, and this is just me, is bring on the competition because I think we're doing a good job.
Gary Smith is the superintendent of RSU 18 near the Belgrade Lakes. Smith has some reservations about school choice, but he also says he would welcome more schools with specialized programs.
I'm not going to say that someone else might not be able to create a niche that would be the right thing for their child. I've had too many parent meetings to say that, nope, this was one size fits all, and that's how you got to do it.
In fact, RSU 18 has taken a unique approach with the Snow Pond Arts Academy, a performing arts charter school in nearby Sydney. Smith says he actually has worked with the academy to share services such as nutrition and transportation. And he says he could even see them sharing academics in the next few years.
Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But I think we've done better than average in that implementation.
Many of these new ideas emerging from the Trump administration are still just proposals. But many rural educators in Maine will be watching the budget negotiations closely. They say their future may be at stake. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Tuesday, April 4th, 2017. Thanks to our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.